WPD Ketchikan. My name's Layla Carey, and for the next couple of hours, we'll be talking with candidates for the Ketchikan Gateway Borough Assembly. With me in the studio are a whole lot of candidates, and we have Sheen Davis, Trevor Shaw, Stephen Bradford, Kim Hodney, Sue Pickerel, Jason... We don't have Jason Mitchell. Sorry about that. And Felix Wong. And we don't have James Shank, Jason Mitchell, or Gabe Duckworth. They weren't able to make it this evening. This is a call-in show. If you have questions for the Assembly candidates, please call 225-9655. But first, we will start off with introductory remarks from each of the candidates. And the first person is Sheen Davis. Please tell us a little bit about yourself and why you're running.
Hello. Thank you for having us. My name's Sheen Davis. I came to Ketchikan about 35 years ago to visit, and pretty much been here ever since. I shortly thereafter married my childhood sweetheart, and we've been together for about 33 years now. I have one child, 2.5 grandchildren, which will be 3 come February. I started our career in public safety with Ketchikan Fire Department in 1987. And moved on to South Tongass Fire Department for the borough in 2005, and retired fire chief in 2012. I bring to the table here tonight is hopefully a lot of questions from your callers. I'm looking really, really forward to that. My main platform is common sense, honesty, and a place where it's okay to say no. And I also really big on worker safety, so I'd really enjoy some questions around that. One of the quirks I have is I notice little details in almost everything, and one of the talents I have is detecting deception when I'm talking to somebody. So thank you very much once again for having us.
It's a good skill. I think we'd all like that. And Trevor Shaw?
Thanks for having us, Layla. Hello, my name is Trevor Shaw. I've lived in Ketchikan almost my whole life. It was a privilege to be raised in such a great community, and I'm proud to call Ketchikan my home. As an 18-year-old high school senior, I was elected to the Ketchikan School Board, a position that I currently hold. As a member of the board, I founded and currently chair the Student Safety Committee, and for the last 2 years, I've served as the co-chair of the Assembly School Board Liaison Committee, which has been great, really getting to know the issues, and so I've enjoyed that, and I'm running for Borough Assembly to bring my record of passionate public service and to the table. And so I think that's really important, is having someone who's been involved in the community for some time, and I'm just looking forward to bringing the knowledge and the experience that I have in the community. I've been involved in community service since I was about 7 years old, helping with my first charity auction then, and so something that I really enjoyed, and since I was 15, I've been going to Borough Assembly meetings. Some people might call me crazy, but it's something that I enjoy, and I spend a lot of time studying the issues and becoming familiar with the governing process at the borough level. And so throughout my time in public service, I've stood up for a sound, responsible governments. I stood on principles, standing up for the community values that I believe in. And I'm not afraid to fight for what I think is right and for what's right for our community and to protect those values. And most of all, I want to see a strong future for our community. For me, this election isn't about the next 3 years of this upcoming term. It's about the next 5, 10, 20 years for our community. And as the youngest elected official in the state, it's important to me that we have a sustainable, worthwhile future here in our community and the community that I love. And that's why I'm running for Borough Assembly.
Thank you. And Stephen Bradford?
Thank you, Leah. I've only lived here for about 7 years. And when I first arrived, someone told me I would either love it here or hate it and not last. Well, I love it here, and I have stayed here. I was previously a municipal attorney in Missouri and also here in Ketchikan before opening my own law office here in Ketchikan. That experience as a city attorney has given me some experience in municipal government, and I understand how government should operate. I've been on the school board for about 4 years, and I think it's taught me a lot about governing, how to be efficient, how to prepare adequately, but also how to take into account the desires and interests of the community as a whole. I married a local girl, Kim Simpson, And all told, we have 7 children, 4 of whom will either are or will be K-High grads. And Kim's parents, Lyle and Olga Simpson, started Timber and Marine and operated it for decades before selling it to their employees. So through my wife, I have extended family with very deep roots that go back generations here in Southeast Alaska. And I want to be on the Borough Assembly so that I can participate in the process of making decisions that will ensure that our future generations also want to be here and will love it here and thrive here and raise a family here.
Okay. Thank you. And Kim Hodney. Am I saying your name correctly?
Yes, you are. Thank you. Good evening, Lila. How are you? My name is Kim Hodney. I have a platform or a thought for my, what jettisons me to this public service would be jobs, family, and future. And I'd start mostly with a family. I've been married to my wife for 20 years, Lori. We have 3 daughters at home, all of them of school age. I have grandchildren in school, so I'm very much tied to the success of the educational system here in the Gateway Borough, and the school funding is one of our primary responsibilities to make sure that it's done well, to make sure that it's complete and as well-funded as possible. And the health of families. Families are the foundation of the community. They have to be whole. They have to be well. They have to be supported. And from there, we need the jobs for the families. And when I say jobs, I mean private sector jobs. We don't need to grow more government jobs or through the government. It's going to come from the private sector. It's the individuals, the entrepreneurs. It's the Alaskan way, more or less. I have been here since 2005. I'm an Alaskan by choice, not by privilege of birth. And we love it here. We have children and grandchildren, obviously, that were born in Alaska. And the future is theirs. And the things that we do in this campaign and in the Borough Assembly for the next several years are going to have a profound effect, I'm sure, on my children's and grandchildren's future. In the tenure of the seats that are open, we will see a presidential election, and we will see a turnover in the governorship as well while we're here. The state's finances, as many of you are aware, are tenuous at best. We need to be extremely fiscally responsible for what's going on. And I believe the borough has carried that torch of responsibility for quite some time, and I'd like to help and be a part of continuing that. So between family, jobs, and the future for it all and for the borough, for the health of us, is what drives me to public service, to seek this seat.
Thank you. And Felix Wong?
Well, good evening. My name is Felix Wong. I was born in Kentucky, raised in Singapore. My previous job gave me the opportunity to visit several countries, so I've had the chance to experience what's it like under different cultures, different governments. So I bring that kind of perspective in. And speaking of perspective, I'm a photographer as well. I love art. I would love to be even more involved in the art community and the art scene here as I continue to live here. Besides that, I'm a electrician at the shipyard. Working at the shipyard is definitely an eye-opener because I work with people who either just came out of high school and are really enthusiastic. I also work with people who are war veterans and have pretty much seen it all. So that's kind of the passions that I bring to the table here, which is jobs and education. I am proud of what we are achieving at the shipyard level, contributing to vocational training by opening our facilities up to train eager people who want to learn how to weld, to do more with their hands, to build things, and also to give opportunities to veterans who want to do something else in their life. So that's something that I'd like to be able to support as decisions are made in the Borough Assembly. Like maybe someone will come in and request for support for hire a veteran program, and that's something I care about for sure. Finally, I'm not ashamed to admit that I'm new to this town. I got here in 2013. I'm also not ashamed to admit that I'm new to politics in general. So I'm more than willing to listen and more than willing to learn. And that's all I have for tonight.
Thank you. And Sue Pickerel.
Hi, Leila. Thank you so much for having me here tonight. I could just about echo just about everything that's been said in terms of your introductions. But I think probably more than anything, it's important for people that don't know me. I am a lifelong resident of Ketchikan. I was born and raised here in Ketchikan. Went to Ketchikan High School here. My family's been raised here. I have three sons, two of whom live here in Ketchikan, and I have six grandchildren in local schools. What I bring to the table is a lot of public experience, both serving on school boards, the KIC Tribal Council, two statewide commissions, numerous parent boards and local organizations serving on boards. So what I bring to the table is that I know this community, and I have a long-term commitment to this community. I plan on dying here in this community, and what happens here is very important, and I feel like I have an investment of you know, my time and effort and my commitment through that public service. I think we are facing very difficult times, especially in the next 3 years. The state deficit is really going to impact this borough. I don't think we've seen yet the results of what the state has refused to do for the last 5 to 10 years in terms of, you know, scaling back spending, and not putting all of that burden on local government. I think they've been able to get by doing that. I think education is extremely important for the future of our children. And my commitment to education is that we won't have a future for this town if we don't invest in education, if we don't invest in vocational training and preparing our children to be able to get jobs right here in Ketchikan so they stay here so we can grow as a community, have a diverse economy. One of my sons would like to come back to Ketchikan, but there aren't enough jobs here for the kinds of things that he would, you know, has an interest in. And I think if we're going to have a future, we need to be able to have more jobs and invest and partner with other people, and as Kim said, you know, in the local economy, asking private industry to help us through this and to partner with private industry over the coming years. I think there are a couple of issues that are out there. I'm sure we'll talk about those tonight, but I have particular interest and particular experience. The tobacco tax, I absolutely have an opinion about that. Also, with the marijuana regulations that are coming down the road. So one of the things that I guess that I would also just like to say that I have a long-term commitment to. Currently, I work at Ketchikan Indian Community, and I work with elders, more than 250 elders a year. Their long-term contributions to this community. We have one of the highest populations of elders anywhere in Southeast Alaska. And I've heard some discussions about, you know, possibly taking away their property tax waiver and maybe instituting taxes for elders. I'm not in favor of that at all. And it's one of the things that I think they've put their time in. They've worked hard, and I think they deserve that. So I know that we'll probably discuss that a little bit later on, but this is one of the issues that I am concerned about. I thank you so much for this opportunity, and I really look forward to you know, to meeting with folks. If you have any questions, I'm available. And that's one of the other things that I am looking forward to is talking to people about what their concerns are. Thank you.
Thank you. And I do want to remind our listeners, this is a call-in show, so if you have questions for our Borough Assembly candidates, please call 225-9655. And let's just jump right into what's been pretty big in the news recently, and that's budget issues. Expenses keep going up with anticipated diminished revenue, at least from the state and probably from the feds, too. What measures would you support to keep the borough budget balanced? And this time we'll start with Trevor Shaw.
The budget issue is definitely very real. The state deficit of $3.5 billion still looms large. over what we're doing, not only at the statewide level, but specifically here in the municipalities. We're in a good position. And right now, I think for us, the best thing we can do is take a calm, steady approach to the budget, making sure that we don't overreact. And because there's two sides to the budget, and it's revenue and spending. And with spending, we have to understand that government services do have to be provided, and as such, we can't make uninformed, rash spending cuts. But also, we have to be good stewards of the taxpayers' dollars. And I've had a record of strong fiscal conservatism during my time in public service. That's something I'm absolutely committed to. And we have to understand that the people aren't at will sources of revenue to be utilized just because there's a budget crunch. And so right now we can keep taxes the way they are. The borough is sitting on a reserve that is cushioned. And so there are a lot of communities around the state that are rushing to raise taxes in order to bring up their revenue to make it through the crisis. And at this point in time, it's not the best idea to raise taxes. We have to make sure that there's a pro-growth environment here. There's a lot of great expansions going on at the shipyard, the hospital expansion, the Coast Guard expansion, the two mines on Prince of Wales, Niblack and Bocan. And so we have a lot of opportunity for economic growth. And so I think our approach to the budget should be making sure that the entrepreneurs in our community, the business owners, the people have room to not just survive but to thrive, and making sure that we have a long-term a strategic plan for the budget, not only where we want to see ourselves now, but where we want to see ourselves in the next 10 years, the next 20 years, having a strong vision for our community, because that's the only way we're going to have a strong future is if we know where we've been, we know where we're at, and we know where we want to be going. I think that's what I bring to the table, is I've been involved in the budget process for the borough and the school board for several years now. I've gone and to the legislature. I've observed the budget process there, so I'm very well versed on the issue, because I believe it is critically important for our leaders to know what's going on with the budget and know how the budget process works. And so at this point in time, I think what I bring to the table is making sure that we have a realistic approach to the budget, and that we work to ensure that we have a pro-growth environment, and that we're striving to have a transparent, responsible, sustainable government that can be supported with the resources we have now. And the people of our community and our state are having to tighten their belts, and there's no reason the local government shouldn't have to do the same.
Stephen Bradford.
The financial problems at the state level are going to loom large over everything that we want to do for the next several years, certainly. And there's going to be a lot of tough decisions ahead. We as a community will not be able to do all of the things that we want to do, but we have to be careful and make sure that we are doing all the things that we should do. There are a number of services that a local government should provide, and there are a number of programs and services that a local government should also support that help contribute to the quality of our life here. And we have to be careful that we don't start cutting everything to the bone and end up cutting back on the services that make this such a wonderful place to live. What we do fund and what we're able to afford will require careful consideration and thoughtful deliberation and research. But most importantly, it will require communication amongst ourselves as a community, so that we can set priorities and determine what it is that we think that our local government should provide. But I also believe strongly that if we don't have a vibrant and growing local economy, or if we don't provide those government services that make this a place where people want to live, then those decisions about allocations of resources are going to become even more difficult. So it'll be tough, but it can be done.
Thank you. And Kim Hodney?
Thank you, Lana. The budget is an interesting subject. Everyone is quite aware that the state, because of the oil prices, everything dropping, the bottom has dropped out. We have a lot. They, in Juneau, are going to have a lot of hard decisions to make in this next session. And I believe, in my opinion, it's decisions that they just decided not to do a year ago on the last session. They're just compounding it. They're pushing it down the way. Unfortunately, Governor Walker doesn't have a printing press in the bottom of the Capitol that he can go down and start printing denials, and we can just start spending and as if, you know, nothing's going on. Locally, fiscal responsibility is, for the borough, handled quite well, in my opinion. Obviously, as many are well to the are aware to their chagrin, that we don't fund the school district to its cap. Personally, I'm glad that we're not at the cap today with the many things that are looming out there with the Supreme Court decision. We're now waiting for the required local contributions. How is that going to fall? How is that going to affect our ability to fund the school district? We need the cushion that we have right now. They're in listening to the two school board members last Wednesday, where they say there's room for a couple $300,000 or $400,000. I agree with that. You know, there are programs, there are good reasons, and the borough has always been generous in that respect with the school board to add funding when requested, when justified, and when needed. I get it, but right now, with such a cloud of uncertainty ahead of us, the Cadillac health tax, I talked about that a week ago, which is still an unresolved issue out of Washington, D.C., but with that Cadillac health tax, 40%, how is that going to affect all of these borough employees, the school district employees, and how are we going to handle funding that? That is something that is an unknown. We need, unlike our counterparts in Juneau, who are at 102% or something of the cap, legal limit that they can fund the school districts, we're not there. So we have room to move. We've protected ourselves to a certain degree. As far as, again, locally, taxes. I'm not interested in raising any taxes, creating any new taxes, until we have, with a fine-tooth comb, gone through our local tax revenue assessment, so to speak. How much taxes are we not collecting that need to be collected? How many people are sliding by and not paying their share, what they're expected to pay? I want to find everything that's supposed to be being paid to make sure that it's being paid, and then we can move forward there before anybody gives any thought about raising any kinds of new taxes or as a form of generating revenue just for the sake of generating revenue. So as far as the state budget goes, those guys aren't going to give us a whole lot of help. In fact, at the assembly meeting last night, the state's trying to turn backwards on us for $65 million for the unfunded pension liabilities. You know, and to the borough's credit, they're going to push back and say, no, that's not how it should be. That's not how it's going to be. But there again, the state trying to shed away their responsibilities, putting $65 million back into our lap. Nah, it's hopefully not going to happen, but there's a fight there. Point being, I will always fight and always do the pushback for that. That's not fair that the state tries to push down on us. Thank you.
Thank you. And Felix Wong?
Regarding the budget issue, I think now is the time more than ever to be even more creative with how we manage the money. Like Kim Hartney brought up, we need to look through and identify what's or who's not paying the dues, and also what about our tax code is not making up for things like inflation. Sometimes it's really not about raising taxes, but readjusting it so that we protect ourselves and not gradually lose money as time goes by. Besides that, I'm interested in finding ways to encourage private industries to contribute more in terms of time, a bit of money and services to help offset some of the responsibilities of the borough. You know, like maybe contributing a dollar matching program for employees who want to fund a nonprofit of their choice, things like that. Besides that, I'm looking forward to learning more about the process and finding out how I can contribute.
And Sue Pickrell?
Yes. Well, coming from somebody that has paid, my husband and I have paid property taxes for more than 30 years here in Ketchikan. So we have put our fair share of money into this community. And I think the biggest thing that I'm going to do is keep in mind that it's not my money to spend, that it is the public's money. And so it comes down to collecting enough property taxes from borough residents so that we can pay for services that we can afford. And then ultimately it comes down to finding out how much money we will have available. Can we cut costs? And most importantly, and what I'm hoping the community will involve themselves with in this governmental process, and it seems like it's a dance between the state of Alaska and the borough every single year. But the borough residents have to tell us what their priorities are, because ultimately the borough assembly will represent you at the table, but the community has to make a priority of what is most important. And so I think those are some of the things that I'm going to keep in mind, you know, throughout this whole process. Is it's not my money to spend. This belongs to the public. What kind of community do we want to see? And that's got to come from the community. They need to let us know what their priorities are, what's important. Because ultimately, it will be the people that are sitting at the table to make those decisions. But we need some input from folks. And I am anxious to be a part of that. And I think my experience in working on the school board and tribal council and other boards with budgets is going to be a real benefit in that process.
And Sheen Davis.
Well, that question was answered pretty comprehensively around the table tonight, I think. I could parrot pretty much what everybody else here said, specifically the public money. It's not my money. I was used to dealing with public funds with the borough for 7-8 years and lots of checks and balances. And it is public money, and it's not really up to us. It's up to the residents of the borough to decide the level of service they want. And if they're willing to pay for that, then by all means, let's do it. I think it's going to be a delayed reaction. I don't think once the state passes their budget that we're going to be, oh my gosh, I don't have food on the table. I think it's going to be delayed. It's going to be over a period of upwards of 18 months. The borough's fiscal budget or fiscal year doesn't end until June 30th this year, and then we're in 2016 budget. And so that's the budget that could possibly have the effects of the state level on it. So it's another 6, 7, 8 months away. I think we're going to see something, but it could be upwards of a year, year and a half before we actually get the full ramifications from it. So it's up to you listeners out there and the taxpayers. What service do you want? You know, whoever's elected, you got to get on their email list and let them know what you want and what you don't want. Thank you.
Thank you. And we do have a caller on the line. It's Rowan. Rowan, are you there?
Yes, ma'am.
Okay, go ahead with your question.
I'm concerned about, I'm only lived here a short time, but I love the idea of the industry creating their own jobs and training people. That seems to be a big problem here among other communities in the southeast. But there's a lot of discrimination against gays and lesbians and disabled people. Do you have any idea how you're going to handle that?
Okay, this time we'll start with Stephen Bradford, a question about how to deal with discrimination in the workplace.
Well, it certainly cannot be tolerated in any way, shape, or form. We need to do all that we can to ensure that our workplace rules and regulations and laws are such that if someone does discriminate for any reason, that they are held accountable. And we also need to do a good job of educating, making sure that everyone in this community is aware of the horrible harm that can come through discrimination. It hurts so much more than the single individual that is being discriminated against. The ripple effects of such treatment go on and on, and it can badly affect an entire community. Ketchikan, I think, has had an interesting history dealing with discriminatory issues. You know, there was a time when the races were kept apart, and Ketchikan played an active role in trying to make sure that an equal education was provided for the races. And of course, Ketchikan is also the home of an individual that should probably be on the $10 bill, Elizabeth Radovich. And so I think Ketchikan has a good history, but certainly more can be done, and we need to eliminate all types of discrimination against anyone.
And Kim Hodney?
Discrimination, never good. It's nothing that we should even be having to have this discussion in 2015. It's ridiculous. I have a beautiful 5-year-old daughter, Julia. She is of Tlingit heritage. Love her dearly. God save the person that ever tries to persecute her. But there is no place for it. There are many laws on the books. We need to ensure that, as most businesses do, their best to guard against workplace discrimination, any kind of discrimination, especially in the workplace. But then again, we're dealing with the human element. And in a perfect world, that free will that we have, there's always going to be a bad apple in it. But then when it comes down to, like we push in our schools so heavily for bullying and the education to it, people have to speak up. There's many things that are sublime. They're behind the corner. They're this and that. And people allow them to happen. And they go on. So until everyone takes a stand for themselves for that type of discrimination, any discrimination, on a color, race, sexual orientation, it doesn't matter. It's wrong. Humans are humans. They deserve the dignity. And it's our responsibility to ensure that integrity of each human is maintained. Now, unfortunately, I'm not so sure how much, this is philosophy, I don't know how much as a borough assembly member I can ever influence that other than just in a public forum such as this, which gives me a platform to push back. Thank you.
Thank you. Felix Wong?
Yeah, that's a really interesting topic because I grew up in Singapore, which is a multicultural society. From the get-go, we have to understand that we need to make it fair for the Chinese people, the Malay people there, the Indian people, East Indian people, and the Europeans who are settled over there. That's why we made English our national language. So this is something that I'm quite familiar with. And on top of that, Vigra Alaska is a equal opportunity employer, so that's something that I'm really proud to be part of. As Kim Honey said, and as well as the sentiment shared by a lot of people, this time and age is not the period to still be dealing with discrimination, but sadly people are people. So there's not much I can do from the borough seat besides make a point to support employers who are equal opportunity minded, people who are open minded to giving people their fair shot, their fair chance, because this is how America was built.
And Sue Pickrell?
My father was Albert Brown, and he was born in a Haida village on the Prince of Wales Island. And he was probably one of the last generation to truly suffer discrimination. He often used to tell me about experiences that he had growing up, seeing signs on windows that said no Indians or dogs allowed. And when he traveled on steamships, he had to stay in certain parts of the ship and couldn't enter certain restaurants and all of that. But he felt it was very, very, very important for people to get an education. And by doing that, and by improving their lot in life, and working hard that they could make a difference. And it was one reason that they moved their family from Heidelberg over here to Ketchikan to raise the 6 children in our family. And so, you know, the discrimination that my father experienced, I can honestly say I did not experience the same kinds of discrimination that he did because of his forward thinking and because he brought his children here to get an education and to work hard. And so I think those kinds of discrimination can be confronted. And I guess in terms of my role as a borough assembly member, and I've served on, you know, other school boards and the KSC Tribal Council, anytime you have humans, there will be discrimination. What I would hope from the borough manager, what I would expect, because he would be our employee, as well as the borough attorney, that we have processes and laws and ordinances in place that deal with the discrimination, and that our human resources folks would have trained our employees and should have regular, you know, regular workshops for employees at what discrimination is and how that shouldn't be tolerated and how our customers are, you know, the public should be dealt with. And that would be my expectation. But as a, you know, as a borough assembly member, to ensure that there are good practices in place and there are processes for dealing with discrimination. More often than not, we don't hear about it till it comes down to a lawsuit. And unfortunately, in this day and age, we cannot afford that. So we need to be proactive and make sure that that doesn't happen. And that would be my expectation as a borough assembly member.
Thank you. And Sheen Davis?
Thank you. I'm going to go back to the question here. The question was discrimination for lesbians, gays, and then those persons with disabilities. So I'm going to bust that into two parts, lesbians and gay. I'm one of the co-founders for Inside Out in Ketchikan, which is an LGBTQ organization. Currently, there are on the books, there is on the table for the Borough Assembly of a resolution to support discrimination at the state level, you know, in support of a law at the state level. It's currently on the table. Discrimination against lesbians and gays are pretty, it's becoming more, I guess, lack of a better word, commonplace. It's not really an issue. Oh, okay, so you're gay, that's okay. Here, we got work to do. A lot of the issues are coming about with transsexuals or what the LGBTQ community calls queers, and it's not illegal to discriminate against somebody that has gender issues. So hopefully this House session, the law will pass to where it will once again be where it will be against the law to discriminate against transgendered individuals. The laws that are on the books now cover, you know, sexual orientation, lesbians, gays, but there's still a group of people out there that it doesn't cover. As regards to disabilities, I think if you talk to a lot of folks with disabilities, initially it's painful, it's hard to work through, but in the long run, they've come to terms with it, and it's usually one of their greatest strengths. And that's kind of the way I look back on diversity among Ketchikan natives, LGBTQ community, people in general, all walks of life. I look at the diversity of Ketchikan as its strength, and second to none. I mean, we got a lot of diversity here, and the more we pull from that and hear from people, I think the better off we'll be. Thank you.
Thank you. And Trevor Shaw.
Discrimination is a terrible thing. It doesn't matter which group is being discriminated against, no matter your race, your gender, your sexual orientation, your religion. Discrimination shouldn't be tolerated at any level. And that's absolutely how I feel about the issue. Because I think it is important that, like Felix said, these were the principles that America was founded on, giving everyone an equal opportunity. When I first ran for school board, that's what one of my big things that I campaigned for was to ensure that every student had an equal opportunity to have an individual, personalized, creative education that worked best for them. And so, and I want everybody to have those opportunities at all levels, not just in regards to education, but in regards to the workplace and housing even. And so it's a terrible thing that there is, like we said, in 2015, there is still this kind of discrimination. And so there are laws on the books at the federal level, and I think those should be more comprehensive. And as public officials, we can't do anything unless we hear about it. We have to be proactive. The community as a whole has to be proactive in standing up against discrimination and reporting it to the proper authorities who will handle it and who will enforce those laws and ensure that discrimination isn't just confronted, but it's also ended. And that's what I want to see happen, because everyone should have an equal opportunity. Everyone has the same rights and liberties under the Constitution. And so, and that's what I've always fought to protect, and I will continue to do so.
Thank you. And this is a call-in show. If you have a question for our Borough Assembly candidates, call 225-9655. And we do have another caller on the line. Jim, are you there?
I'm here.
Okay, go ahead with your question, Jim.
My question is, have you given any consideration to a plan to accommodate the will of the people and make legal cannabis available to adults and to tax it to help relieve the borough budget problems? I'll take my answer off the air. Thank you.
Okay. Thank you, Jim. A question about establishing a legal marijuana retail operations and local taxes for that. And this time we'll start with Kim Hodney.
An interesting question, just in the fact that it's been voted, as all of us will probably attest to, it is legal in the state, and now at the state level, they're wrangling with, they're doing their best to craft the laws and the boundaries and just how the handling of the people's will by the vote for legalizing marijuana, how they're going to deal with that, and what is the best way to go to it. Here locally, I believe Assemblyman Thompson is the chair of our local cohesive group from the school board, the city council, the borough, and Saxman also, I believe, is a part of that committee. They will, they're holding hearings, they're doing their due diligence, they're keeping open to it, but nobody can do anything. You know, it's not a matter of, have we given it a thought, are we going to make it legalized? That's already been done by the voters a year ago. Now we're just waiting for the rules to come down, and once those rules come down from the state, then we will better know how to manage or what we need to augment into those rules, or are they going to be right? 5,000 feet from a daycare center and a school, and all of the practical, you know, responsible things are going to be taken care of. It's tough to answer the question when we don't have all of the answers or all of the information to be able to answer the question cohesively, because we just don't know. The states, I'm not going to say they're dragging their feet. They're doing their due diligence and taking their time, giving it thought, thinking it through in the right way that it needs to go so it can work, so it's not crazy as some of the other states down south, you know, that have gone through with it. So we have to wait and see, but we will do something.
And I do think the question is based on the fact that local communities can choose to ban retail marijuana operations, even though personal use is still allowed. So that's I believe, the basis of the question.
Yeah, but I understand. Well, that's going to be kind of up to the committee, whatever the committee brings to as a recommendation. If that's one of their recommendations, we'll have to see to it. Personally, I would disagree with that simply because the majority of the state, of the people, the will was there to legalize it. Now, how do we best do that? And inside of that law, I believe its original intention was just so people could grow weed at home and smoke it for themselves. I have absolutely no space in my brain for all of the Kit Kat or Oreo or Hershey branded like packaging for all the edibles, all the other craziness that has come out of this, and the drinks, blah blah. Hate me, like me, whatever. But you know, I believe the original intention was to, people wanted to smoke pot, and that's kind of the basis of it. So we'll pay attention to it.
Thank you. And Felix Wong.
Yep.
This, as it stands, I think is still quite a groundbreaking issue to address. So I don't think we want to be too anxious and jump the gun and step ahead of what the state would like to establish as law. So there has been consideration indeed to look at legalized marijuana as a source of revenue. But my stand is to be a bit more cautious about it before further decision is made.
Okay. And Sue Pickerell?
Well, I was worked at the Ketchikan Police Department for over 10 years in law enforcement, and so I have some pretty strong feelings about marijuana and the subsequent results of people that have marijuana addiction. And I know there are many people out in the community that believe, you know, smoking marijuana is a victimless crime, but I saw a lot of heartache over a number of years related to the use of marijuana. In terms of banning retail establishments, in the same avenue that I spoke of earlier, asking for community input, I think a prioritization of what do we want our community to look like. And that comes from the community, and that comes from people, you know, making their wishes known. The voters made their wishes known, and so it's state law, and we're dealing with it right now. There has to be regulation, and I think that's one of the reasons the committee is waiting on finding out what those regulations will be. There's an Alcoholic Beverage and Control Board, and they provide regulation for what happens in liquor stores and in bars. And so the same way we'd have to have that for marijuana establishments. And really before you start looking at how many do we want, at one time when I was a police officer here, we had more bars and liquor stores in Ketchikan than we did churches. There was well over 50, 60 bars at any given time. And so we need to really look at what, you know, what kind of community we want. This is a gateway community. We'll have many tourists and folks coming to Alaska, and that will be one of the attractions. In fact, it's being sold, you know, just that way, that this will be the new frontier for buying marijuana and being able to have access to this. I have some real concern about other problems that other states have had in Washington and Colorado with edibles and the THC content and children getting access to that, and the number of emergency room visits that were, you know, resulting out of that. So I do have some real concerns, and I think it really it would behoove us to take the time to do this right from the get-go, and to make sure that we have considered all of these things. I much agree with Felix that it's not something you can just jump into, because our community and what our community will look like over the next, you know, 10 years will be very important based on these kinds of decisions. Thank you.
And Sheen Davis?
Thank you very much. Have I given any thought to the taxation and helping the schools out with the sale of marijuana? Yes, quite a bit. I've been following the, you know, other states and their revenues from taxation for marijuana. And yeah, I'm in support of that. Am I anxious to get on and start collecting taxes for it? Yeah, me as a citizen, I certainly am. The problem is if we go as a borough and we start putting regulations for the sale and use of marijuana or cannabis, and the states contradict us, then we're going to have to go back and change ours. So I'm in agreement with that. We need to wait to see what the state has coming down the pipe. And then I said it at the chamber luncheon, I think we need to take advantage of an already existing market base. It's here. Other states have reported a reduction in teenage use and crimes involved with just marijuana. And I think there's some positives out of it. Thank you.
And Trevor Shaw?
I'm in agreement with everyone that we need to kind of wait and see what the state does. This can't be an issue that we rush into. We have to be smart about it. We have to be well informed, because we owe it to the people to do our due diligence and make sure that we do it right the first time, so that we don't get into the process, discover that it's not working, and then have to back up and go back to square one. The voters did vote to legalize marijuana. So that's something that that will move forward from the state level. They'll issue their regulations. I think marijuana, if it's going to be legal in the Ketchikan Gateway Borough, depending on what the committee recommends, what the various governmental bodies decide, the various members of those bodies, and then the community as a whole, what they want that to look like, not just now, but again, I think in the future of our community, how we want that to play a role in Ketchikan in the future. And so I think we have to take a good hard look at making sure it's regulated well, it's welcome, to make sure that only adults have access to it. I was the president of the Ketchikan Youth Court, president of the United Youth Courts of Alaska, so I saw what underage marijuana use looked like. And it is your personal choice to use it, and I believe you should have that choice. However, I do believe there are addictive qualities to marijuana, and so especially with THC content. And so I've seen what it's done to young people, and so we need to make sure we're going about this in the right way. We need to make sure that not only are we prohibiting it from being sold to young people, but that we really penalize those who do. And if you're going to sell marijuana to our kids, well, guess what? We're pulling your license and you'll never get it back again, and I won't waver on that because we need to do this responsibly. We have to take care of our kids, and I'm solidly in support of that. No one's going to change my mind. Having seen what that looks like on an individual, up-close, personal level, it's heartbreaking. So I want to make sure that we do this in the right way. And if it's going to be legal, yes, we need to tax it. We need to tax it responsibly. That money should go towards education, and also not only general education for the school district, but also education about marijuana, rehabilitation. If there are those people who are addicted and they want to change their lifestyle, there needs to be an understanding of that the money's going to go towards educating people about cannabis. And so it's a complicated issue. It's something that we're really going to have to take a look at. But it needs to be well-regulated, responsibly regulated, taxed, and we have to do everything we can to keep it out of the hands of our children and punish those who legally give it to them.
And Stephen Bradford.
Thank you. It's a clear issue for me because the voters did speak, and I think the voters across Alaska, both locally and statewide, have expressed their desire to allow reasonable commerce and consumption of cannabis. And I don't think a single voter went into the voting booth to vote yes thinking, I'm going to vote yes, but I sure hope the Marijuana Control Board or the local government puts up as many silly roadblocks and impediments as they can possibly think of. I think our regulators need to get out of their way. They need to acknowledge the will of the people, but still craft reasonable rules that protect our community. And then let's turn it into a benefit. Let's provide a reasonable tax on the sales of cannabis to make up for some of the shortfalls of the state. Colorado has already reported that this year their taxes on cannabis sales exceed the taxes they've collected on alcohol sales. We're talking huge revenues if it's managed correctly. We have a huge black market in it right now. It is making its way to our children right now. We need to get in there and craft reasonable regulations that provide for legal sales and consumption of cannabis. And we'll eliminate, in part, the black markets. We'll have better access to be able to control whether or not it's getting to our children if reasonable rules are in place. I think Oregon has a good model allowing for retail sales. We should be looking closely at what they are doing there. We don't need to reinvent the wheel. Let's follow the good aspects of Colorado and Oregon and maybe make some tweaks that apply directly to Alaska. But I think the regulators, especially the Marijuana Control Board, need to acknowledge the will of the people.
Thank you. And this is a call-in show. If you have questions for our Ketchikan Gateway Borough Assembly candidates, please call 225-9655. And we do have a caller on the line. Mark, are you there?
Yes, ma'am, I am.
Okay, go ahead with your question, Mark.
Yes, I'd like to ask the panel what are their individual feelings on consolidation of the city and the borough. I think this would be a good idea, personally. It would eliminate one layer of government. But I'd like to know how the panel thinks about that.
Thank you, Mark. And this time we'll start with Sue Pickrell. What do you think about consolidation?
Well, I'm not in favor of consolidation until we know all the costs involved, and we can share those costs with the community so taxpayers and voters can make an informed decision about consolidation. I think we should know how much that we're going to have to increase taxes for all the added costs, public works, public employees, retirement system, and what the tax cap amount would be, would cost each property owner. Thank you.
And Sheen Davis?
Consolidation. Well, I'm not really sure. If it comes up again, am I in support of it? With the given information from the last times of consolidation, I would have to say no. I would not be in support of consolidation. I would want a bunch of new information, new numbers, new panel, and new reasons why. No.
Trevor Shaw?
So I definitely support the voters and the decisions that they've made in the past, the last five times that there's been a consolidation vote. It's all they've all failed, and handily so. And I believe in the concept of consolidation. However, like I've said before, the implementation of that, I don't think it's been crafted in not only a trustful manner, but in a practical manner. And so consolidating the borough and the city would bring all of those costs together to the borough, additional tens of millions of dollars in bonded debt. You got to look at public works. You got to look at parks and recreation. You've got to look at the police department. You've got to look at fire and EMS. You've got to look at water and sewer. And it's been said many different times by many different people, professionals in the field, that it would actually first cost us more to consolidate than in the initial years than it would actually save us money. And so during a budget crisis like this, I can't support consolidation knowing that it's going to cost borough and city taxpayers more money, and not necessarily knowing that how we're going to move forward in a practical way to consolidate those governments and ensure that we're providing the promised services to all citizens of a consolidated municipality. And so I'm not in support. I think we should be focusing on improving relations with the city council, the school board. That's something that's very important. That's something I've always fought for. And because we need to work on the efficiencies, the vision that we have for the community, the capital improvement projects, what our goals are, not only locally, but what we want to see happen at the state level, making sure that those at the state know how the decisions that they make are going to impact our community, not just the borough, but the city, the school board, the city of Saxman. And so a great example is our borough is a couple hundred square miles larger than the state of Rhode Island, and Rhode Island has five counties. Now, I'm not saying by any means that we should have that many governments. I'm just saying that right now what we've got, it's working well because of the different services that are being provided to different people, and if we're going to consolidate, we need to make sure that we have detailed information, know what it's going to cost, know what we want it to look like, not only 5 years from now, but 20 years from now. Like I said, we need to have a long-term strategic plan as to the vision we want to see that we have for our community. And if it's something the voters want to see happen, then we need to talk about it. I will support talking about it, but I want to make sure it's done the right way.
Stephen Bradford.
Well, it makes no sense to me that in a community of less than 14,000 people, we have both a city manager and a borough manager, two clerks, two finance managers, two legal departments, and so on. And now there are some who want to add yet another governmental body in Ward Cove with still more duplication. I will disagree a little bit with Trevor. I'm not sure that consolidation would cost money. If it would cost money, I would not be in favor of it. But I also think that if consolidation is done correctly and you're eliminating all those duplicated services, why would it cost more to consolidate? So clearly the research needs to be done. If we're going to take a look at consolidation, we have to give it that proper consideration and research. There has to be an open discussion of both the pros and the cons. I think both the borough assembly and the city council would have to buy into it equally. I think at the last vote anyway, one of the bodies was much more in favor of it than the other. And I think that was reflected in the information that was disseminated from the two bodies. So I think a decision needs to be made on the finances of it, the facts, sound reasoning, and a careful look at what are the best interests of the community as a whole, and have a vote on that basis rather than on mistrust, emotions, or unfounded promises as it may have been in the past.
And Kim Hodney?
Thank you. I have voted no on consolidation once in my time here in Ketchikan. And unless there is a compelling new argument for consolidation that would get past the voters, which would seems highly unlikely, it's almost an irrelevant conversation today. We have many, many issues in front of us. There's no citizens initiative pushing for consolidation again. I understand there's a lot of hard feelings kind of on both sides of the issue, those that were so supportive of consolidation and have it fail so many times, and those that are completely against consolidation, and they get frustrated with having to deal with it and keep voting it down and as it goes. I need to hear new arguments. I need to be, there needs to be a compelling reason to go for it, and something more than just about duplication and things of that nature. The city and its governing body, they have a particular set of responsibilities, from garbage collection to the police department, many things more than what we in the borough have to deal with. And I have no problem with the city dealing with theirs and the borough dealing with their responsibilities of school funding and the way that it needs to be. I grew up in Iowa, 99 counties in that little bitty state, and all of the county seats, everyone functioned really quite well. We dealt with what we had to deal with, which was their responsibilities. So until somebody brings it forward and really puts the argument forward that makes consolidation good sense, you know, I'm waiting to hear that. I'm open to hear it. You know, if it's out there, I'll listen. I'd, you know, love for the argument to go away somehow, one way or the other. But today, no. Sorry to disagree with you, Mark, but, you know, bring me a good reason. Talk to me personally, you know, call. I'd love to hear why people think that it could still work. Thank you.
And Felix Wong.
Thank you. Personally, I'm all for streamlining processes, making things more efficient, and if a good set of arguments and transparent disclosures prove that, I will support it. I've heard that the city initiated it and it got voted down. The borough tried it as well and it got voted down. So I think this go around, it has to come as a petition from the people, with enough voices who agree that this is a good idea. Perhaps then we'll start looking at things at how the numbers would work out, whether it will indeed cost more, and if that's the case, whether now's a good time or not, or if it's not going to cost too much more and save us more money in the long run. I'm all for saving money in the long run. Thank you.
Thank you, and I think, okay, we do not have a caller online. I thought we might, but we don't. So we'll move on to the next question. And I'm going to get into education for the next few questions. I have some specific questions dealing with the lawsuit and that sort of thing. But my first question is, do you believe the school district is adequately funded by the borough? And because of a mistake I made and whose turn it was to go first, Felix went last, and now he gets to go first again. So we'll start with Felix.
Well, education is a passion of mine. I'm all for supporting education as much as it's financially possible, given our circumstances. As I've expressed before, we should not see it as an expense, but more of an investment that will grow and pay us back in the long run. I acknowledge the statistics that we, comparatively to the other cities in Alaska, we kind of like just beyond the halfway mark. If there's a way for us to do better, I'm all for it. But once again, we need to acknowledge that already we have to sacrifice funding to the non-profits, to other services. We need to be more thorough in looking through our balance sheets and make sure that we can fund more. That's my position.
Thank you. And Sue Pickerel?
Well, I have to believe that this borough has shown a commitment to education, and I think people in this community have always shown a commitment to education. I think that's one of the great things about living in Ketchikan is because people really care about their children in schools, and that is a priority, and it has always been that way. When you look at the kinds of things that have been funded, you know, from its, you know, the swimming pool and recreation and things like that that involve families and children, there is the commitment there. When I look at the current funding level, people will always say that we need more, and I agree, we need to improve our schools. But when you have many, many other programs and priorities for our community that have to be weighed, if not equally, they are as important. And again, that it does come down to community priority. And so I guess I would say it really comes down to how much money do we have? How much is it going to cost us? And what are the priorities for our community in terms of education? Somebody was told me that maybe I didn't have the right figures that I quoted recently at a chamber luncheon in terms of how much we are funding per student. And at that time, I had quoted $17,699,000 per student, and I asked today to find out, am I correct in that number? Because I'd read that in Borough Assembly minutes as far as how much money we were spending per student. And so what I found out was last night the Borough Assembly passed a $3.5 million increase in funding the pension buy-down from the state. And so that is going to, with the total spending last year, that's going to bring per student spending with a pension buy-down allocation up to $35,000 per student. Per student. And then without the allocation, it was about $21,500 per student. So while, yes, I would like to see the school district funded as, you know, as much as we possibly can, I also think it has to be what we can afford. And I think there has to be a prioritization in our community. And there are other programs, and I think we'll have to take a look at each and every one of those. Thank you.
And Sheen Davis.
Thank you. I think we're pretty lucky in this community to have a good school district, school board, and assembly that listens to the taxpayers and voters. Obviously, education in the schools is the number one priority in Ketchikan, at least of the people I've seen in the last 8 years testifying at the Borough Assembly meetings and in the folks I've talked to. Are we funding adequately? I believe so. I think the Assembly and School Board has reluctantly come to terms each year at budget time, and it seems like the staff and the parents are happy with the funding. However, when talking with residents of Ketchikan, all over Ketchikan, the school district does weigh so heavy as their number one priority that they would be willing to give up another borough service if push came to shove. So that's, I guess that would be my stance. I think the schools are being funded adequately. If they aren't, then your new assembly members and the ones that are in office still need to hear it. Thank you.
And Trevor Shaw?
Education is definitely a passion of mine. I was privileged to be able to go through the Ketchikan Gateway Borough School District through my high school graduation. It gave me the individual opportunities that I probably wouldn't have had otherwise. I was able to run a campaign for school board as an 18-year-old high school senior and take my passion for public service to the next level and get my diploma all at the same time. So it really provided me with the time management and the ability to build an education the way I wanted to build it. And that's what we have here in Ketchikan. And those are the opportunities and the services that we're providing to our students. And I can vouch for that because I was there and I went through the process. Education funding is close to being adequate. I think, as I've said before, within $400,000 or $500,000, we can continue providing the quality education that we currently have here in Ketchikan. But that's because it's a big part of ensuring a strong future for our community. We have to have our community has to be attractive. We have to make sure that we're providing services and opportunities that people want to have and that will keep them here. And I think a quality education is a great benefit that we're currently providing. It makes people want to stay here, makes people want to build families here, and that's why I enjoy being involved so much, is that I'm able to see those people come and reap the benefits of what we're sowing here, and that's what I want to continue doing. And so I think and the funding is currently adequate within, like I said, $400,000 or $500,000, and getting that money comes from consistent, transparent conversations with the borough assembly, between the assembly and the school board. That's something that's very important. I've served as a co-chair of the assembly school board liaison committee for the last 2 years. I've worked hard to establish the relationship that we have with them, to improve that relationship and make sure they understand our funding needs, and that's what I want to bring to the table at the borough assembly. And so just making sure that we have that relationship, that we have that dialogue, they understand the importance of our priorities at the school board level, that we don't micromanage, but that we make sure that we're providing the funding to the school board that can ensure that they can continue providing a quality education and being able to retain staff. And that's an important part for employers here in our community, is being able to retain workers and having providing a quality education to their kids is a good way to keep people here. I think we can be innovative in regards to the school district budget. I think public-private partnerships are very important. VOTEC, Vocational Technical Education, is very important because we want to be able to keep some of those students straight out of high school here who want to live here but can't find a job. We want to make sure that they have the skills to go into a job straight out of high school so that they can stay here. And so I think we've got an excellent public education system. I think the funding is good, and I think we can continue providing a quality education like the one that I was able to receive. That's what I want to see continue happening, and that's what I fought for, and I'll continue to do so.
And Stephen Bradford?
The question was, is school funding adequate? And my answer is, we are close. I don't believe we're quite there. We do not provide the same level of local contributions to our schools as do our peer communities. For example, Juneau provides funding at about 102% of the cap, which is the maximum allowed by law, and we're not even close to that. But I also don't think we should be funding to the cap. I don't favor a big influx of additional local funding. I think this past year, I'm similar to Trevor, and it's probably because we sat on the school board together, but I think an additional $300,000 or $400,000 would have allowed us to really enhance the quality of the education we're providing to our children. And that's only about a 1% increase in the operating budget. So I don't think a great amount of additional funding is necessary. It's all a question of priorities. But I will put in a plug for people to get out and vote in this coming election, because you're going to be electing borough assembly and school board members who need to be thinking about the future. And Ketchikan might have some good things on our horizon. We're going to be expanding the Coast Guard base, getting those two bigger cutters that are going to have more families coming to Ketchikan that are with the Coast Guard. The mines that have been mentioned over on POW should bring additional jobs here to Ketchikan, should bring additional families to Ketchikan with school-aged children. So I think the future is bright for the Ketchikan Gateway School District. And we need to be thinking about the future, and we need to make sure that we have the adequate facilities and programs to provide for those children as they come to this community.
And Kim Hodney.
Thank you. As I stated earlier, I believe that the school district is funded at an adequate level. And adequate by no means is, that's all it is. It's adequate. We're not under the board. We're not way at the top of it. We're doing it adequately. I believe, as Trevor and Stephen mentioned, there's probably room for a bit more spending to enhance what we are doing now. Last evening at the assembly meeting, there was a gentleman that was actually quite surprised to see there. He was with the Future Farmers of America. And being an Iowa boy, I grew up with all of that. And I had a short conversation with him, and I never thought about Future Farmers of America in Ketchikan, really? And yes, really. It's a program, and it's a part of the diverse education and to stem the brain drain of our youth all going south, because grass is greener down south. We need to, for like the mariculture, Oceans Alaska, great presentation last night. It's something that's heavily invested. They see a large future in that. We need to start pursuing alternative paths for our youth through our education system. It's not all just about going to college and burning up mom and dad's money and dropping out 2 years later. And a large percentage of kids happens that way. A lot of kids, obviously, you know, go on and graduate college. For myself, I did 4 years in the U.S. Navy, and then I went to college. And at that time, I was ready for it. I was not ready for it going out of coming out of high school. It's real encouraging for me personally to see Vigor continue the program, the welding program, through the high school to get the kids involved, that which was started at Alaska Ship and Dry Dock with Randy Johnson, and the seeing forward of how that works. And we need to invest for the real jobs, the things that not everybody's cut out for college. Not everybody wants to go, but they throw their hands up and they don't think there's anything there. The vo-tech, the alternative ideas from welding to the mariculture, we need to start looking at and exploring, and with the school district and the community coming together, how can we make our school district better and better suited and prepare our children for their futures? It plays to my theme of family, jobs, and futures. The family's going to grow. It's the foundation of the community, and that happens with an excellent, a good, well-rounded, diverse, meeting the needs of the people education system, which then they will create their jobs. You know, we need to maintain that entrepreneurial spirit in the young ones and get them all. My daughter, 16 years old, she can't wait to get off the rock. You know, how often do you hear that? I say that as an adult. I do it 3 times a year, and I'm good for it. But it's not to leave. We got to stem that brain drain. We need to inspire and have a reason for our children to want to stay here. But it all starts with their education. So it needs to be funded properly and in the right direction and not overdone just for the sake of spending and just because, you know, they want a big one. But we need to get creative as to the alternative types of education that are most needed in this community to help this community grow and to best use our talents and our resources. Our children, you know, are our resource, and what we do today makes their future for tomorrow. Thank you.
Thank you. And I do want to remind people, this is a call-in show. If you have questions for the assembly candidates, you can call 225-9655. And we do have a caller on the line. Julie, are you there?
I'm here.
All right, great. Go ahead with your question.
So I'm calling about the tobacco tax, which has obviously been a pretty big issue that's been bounced around between the city and borough for quite some time now. I've got kind of a three-part little question here. Basically, what are your opinions about that tobacco tax that actually failed, and do you think it should be brought back again? If so, do you think that the vapor products, which are also known as e-cigs, should be included under the tobacco tax, even though they are tobacco-free?
Okay, so question about the tobacco tax. Should it be brought back? If so, what about e-cigs? And this time we'll start with Sheen Davis.
So the first part of the question was, I was in support of the tobacco tax. No, I was in opposition to the tobacco tax because it was about $30 per carton of cigarettes. And, yeah, I'm a smoker. But I thought it was too high of a tax for one particular item. $3 per pack was a little high. Would I support the tobacco tax if it came back? Perhaps if it was lower. Lower than $3. What was the last part of that?
Should e-cigarettes be included in a tobacco tax, even though they contain no tobacco?
No. because there are lawsuits all over the country right now on those e-cigarettes, and I think there's one in Fairbanks right now of e-cigarettes being taxed and issues with it. No, it's the tax that was brought before the assembly was a tobacco tax, and the e-cigarettes that have no tobacco in them can't be taxed. It's not a tobacco item. The common sense thing there. One of my platforms I'm running on. Thank you.
Thank you. And Trevor Shaw?
No, I didn't support the tobacco tax. I was the only candidate who got up in front of the borough assembly and said, no, I don't support this. For one, I don't agree in raising taxes in general. I specifically don't agree with sin taxes. You shouldn't tax a specific group of people or specific product just because just for the revenue. If you're going to do that, it should be the funds should go towards education, rehabilitation, and whatnot, in my personal opinion. And so, but I still didn't support the tax because it wasn't needed. It was quite punitive. And it would have, like Sheen said, it was a lot of money. And so specifically focusing on a product and targeting a group of people for that, I don't believe that is right. It has the potential of coming back in the future in the borough. And so the only way that I would support that is if it went to a vote for the from the people. And so if the voters want it, that's something that is absolutely their decision. I don't think the borough assembly should pass it without voter approval. Even then, I'm not sure I would be in favor of it. If you're going to raise taxes for revenue, you should do it across the board. But I don't support raising taxes at all at this point in time, and you're going to have a hard time convincing me to do it in the future. I think we should work with the resources that we have. We should look at innovative ways to find new revenue and make sure that if we're making spending cuts, we're doing so in a smart, well-informed manner, and that we do so wisely. And so, but in regards to the tobacco tax, no, I don't support it, and I would only support it coming back for a vote by the people. And that should not include e-cigarette products. If there's an excise tax on a product, they would have to do that completely separately, which I also don't support.
And Stephen Bradford.
Well, I'll take a little bit of a different tact on this. I don't know that a tobacco tax is the type of an issue that should be submitted to a popular vote, simply because far and away the greater percentage of the population does not smoke, and so they're going to be more inclined to vote one way or the other. I think the reason we have elected officials is for them to make the hard decisions occasionally. So I think it is the decision that should be made by the assembly or by a city council rather than submitting it to a popular vote. I don't think every issue should be submitted to a popular vote. I also have no problems with identifying a particular type of a product and taxing it differently than just general sales tax. We do that with alcohol. And we should do it with cannabis. And I also would think that it could be appropriate to tax tobacco as a different product than a general consumer item. For one thing, it's a well-known fact and well-documented and researched fact that smoking does have significant social costs associated with it. And because of that, I think it is appropriate to consider taxing it differently than a candy bar. So yes, I would have voted yes in favor of the tax. I am also in agreement somewhat with Sheen that I think the level that they were contemplating previously was a bit high. But I don't disagree with the general concept of a tobacco tax. As for whether or not the vapor e-cig should be included, if it's truly a tobacco tax, then no. And at this point, I don't have enough information to have an opinion on whether or not the definition of the consumable should be expanded to include the e-cigs. But my gut reaction is that no, it should not.
And Kim Hodney.
Thank you. I don't believe the hammer of taxation should be used for social engineering. And at the end of the day, that cigarette tax, that was what it was about. They wanted to change the behavior of a group of people by adding an exorbitant tax, which would have actually, at the end of the day, only created another black market, which we just tried to get away from with marijuana. If you're going after the sin taxes, personally, you know, we all understand. We've been educated for years and years as to the health concerns and problems with associated with smoking. It's uncontestable. But also, my view of that is, well, there's plenty of taxes on a pack of cigarettes today. Federal, state, they're all there. What grinds at me is the incredible diabetes, obesity, and all these other maladies that are far quickly passing heart disease, quickly passing the smoker's problems. And so if you want to tax something, put 5 cents on every can of soda. Put quarter on every bag of potato chips. You know, you want to generate some real revenue and get to everybody, well, then let's spread the misery, you know, across the way. Let's not just create some new tax for the sake of taxation because you want to add to the general fund. That's basically what it is. Education is out there. Everybody knows. You can't turn on the TV and watch it for an hour and not get an anti-smoking commercial, you know, public service announcement. It's in the schools. It is becoming less and less popular in the general public all the time. So, no, that was regressive. I didn't like the idea of it. If you want to tax something, tax all of the junk food that's out there, and you'll really make some money.
Felix Wong?
Well, for me, I would support the tax, but as Sheen Davis brought up, as well as Stephen and Trevor, $3 a pack is quite a jump. So if it gets brought up again, perhaps we could revise the figure a little bit. Perhaps make it such that it's also inflation proofed, so that it doesn't become like what we have with the solid waste disposal fees, you know. And what we use that revenue for, I think we should also look into quitting programs, at least for people who are looking to get out of it, get out of the habit, you know, mostly because maybe they have family members finally done with the smell, things like that, for the sake of other people. And when it comes to e-cigarettes, yeah, I mean, when you look at it semantically, it does not apply. So I think vapor products should have its own separate tax.
And Sue Pickrell.
Well, I don't believe in putting taxes on individual items as a way to stop people from smoking. I have far too many friends. I had a family member that died from lung cancer. So I'd rather just see cigarettes completely illegal altogether. I'd like to see us get rid of cigarettes completely. And in terms of change, what I've seen happen with friends and coworkers is that putting in regulations that ban them from public places. They can't be, you know, near doorways. They can't be in workplaces and those kinds of things. And I've seen more people quit for things like that because you make it inconvenient for them. I don't believe taxing people that that's the way. I just don't believe that's the way to bring about change. In terms of e-cigarettes, I'd like to see those banned as well. Because I don't think that it helps tremendously. There's more and more studies coming out every day that those are toxic. There are properties in those that are very, very bad for your body. And also in terms of other people that are around you when you're smoking those e-cigarettes, you know, they're doing more and more studies on those. So I'd like to see those go away as well. I don't support taxes.
Thank you. And this is a call-in show. We have about half an hour left. If you have questions for our Ketchikan Gateway Borough Assembly candidates, Now's the time to call at 225-9655. Let's get back to the education issue. I was wondering what your thoughts are on the borough's lawsuit against the state of Alaska over education funding. If you had been on the assembly, would you have voted to sue the state? And this time we'll start with Trevor Shaw.
It's always been an interesting topic. As a member of the school board, I watched the assembly go through the process and move forward with the lawsuit against the state. At the time, I was a bit apprehensive about what that the lawsuit would look like, what it would cost us. And in retrospect, it's a hard decision to make. You can have the cop out and say, yes, I would support it. Look at how far we've gone. At the time, I wasn't sure what the cost was going to be. I knew what was on the horizon for the state. $3.5 billion deficit. The lawsuit is going to cost the state in one way or another. $230 million. If the decision by the Superior Court is upheld, that's $230 million in required local contributions across the state that the state of Alaska will have to provide. Now, they can change the formula. There can be changes to the legislation, the statute, in regard to how those funds are used. And because the part of the Constitution that the required local contribution ran up against was the dedicated funds clause. And if you read it very clearly in black and white, no dedicated funds. And so it's right there. Doesn't take an attorney to understand that. And so at the time, it would have been a hard decision to make, and I would have been undecided, and I'm not sure how I would have voted. I do support the lawsuit and the fact that I do believe that it violates the Alaska State Constitution. I believe there does need to be a change in the formula and the current laws on the books and how we fund education. It needs to be the House Task Force on Sustainable Education came back and said, no, education funding is not sustainable in the state of Alaska. That's a big red flag. We need to change the way we're doing business in regards to education funding. We need to be innovative. We need to make sure that we, again, have a long-term strategic plan. The boroughs, the school districts need to get involved, come up with what works, and we need to put it into effect because efficiency, transparency, and sustainability is absolutely key to making sure we have quality education, not only here in Ketchikan, but the state as a whole.
Thank you. And Stephen Bradford?
My grandmother used to have a saying, be careful what you wish for. And I think that might apply to this situation. I'm not sure that win or lose, the outcome is going to be that beneficial to Ketchikan. If the Supreme Court affirms the decision of the Superior Court and we win the case, what's the result? What's the benefit to Ketchikan? The state is in a world of financial hurt. They can't just step up with that $230 million that Trevor just referred to. And so I'm not certain that even if we win, we benefit. It's a close legal question. I enjoyed listening to the arguments before the Supreme Court, and I don't know how they will rule. And obviously it's a close question, or it wouldn't have made it to the Supreme Court. We may win, we may lose. Ultimately, I'm not sure the impact on Ketchikan is going to be that great or that different, win or lose. And so I come back to, if that's true, why did we just spend $500,000 on legal fees? So no, I don't think it was a good decision.
Thank you. And Kim Hodney?
Tough decision, but at the end of the day, it's about integrity and it's about equality. The unincorporated areas of the state aren't subject to this required local contribution. It's basically they get a free ride on the backs of the organized boroughs to pay our share and their share. You know, and at the end of the day, it did cost us a lot of money. But the integrity of the Constitution, if it is unconstitutional that they have gouged all these boroughs, these incorporated boroughs of money for all this time, that's wrong. It needs to be stopped. And if we are successful in this lawsuit, then the state is going to have to change its formula. Something new will come out of it. And what will come out of it is equality for all of Alaska, for all of the school districts out there that have to pay. We're going to pay the same, whether you're an incorporated borough, unincorporated, wherever you are in the state. They're going to have to make a decision. And, of course, if it goes against us, then all bets are off. You know, they'll maintain the status quo. The unincorporated school districts, you know, continue to be funded by the state. They won't have any of their money going into it, and we will continue to carry them on. So I think it was the right thing to do. It cost us a lot of money. Sometimes you got to spend money to make money. Not that we're going to make any money on this one, but it's the integrity of the issue, and it's the integrity for the state and for the Constitution for them not to turn an eye to, sometimes they want to, but in this instance, now we're not going to. We're going to do it our way. So I'm glad we went forward with it, and however it ends up, hopefully a little bit of equity will come across the state, and everybody, all school districts, will pay and be funded in the same light. Thank you.
Felix Wong?
That is a big issue, very complicated and complex. Personally, I think it may not be a very good idea. I'm all for making your voice heard, making our voices heard, and perhaps there could have been another avenue besides filing a huge lawsuit and all this expenditure that happened thus far. And as Stephen said, no matter what happens, ultimately it's still up to the state to decide what they're going to do based on the court's decision. I don't know. I mean, for me, I think time and energy and money could have been spent differently than through a lawsuit.
And Sue Pickrell?
Well, personally, I think it was a good idea, and I would have voted in favor of it. I think all school districts across this state should be paying the same. I think equality is important, and I believe that Ketchikan is at the forefront of making sure that that happens. I agree with Stephen. I don't think it's necessarily going to mean that we will be saved a whole lot of money, because I think for whatever savings there is for the state that's spread across those other school districts, they'll come up with another formula that we'll have to pay more. The only difference will be that at least all the other school districts will have to pay the same amount that we do. So at least it will be spread out over all the school districts, which is you know, the fairness of it. And so for that reason, I would support it. And I think at some point you have to make a stand and say wrong is wrong. And, you know, and I think Ketchikan has always been one that says, wait a minute, we wouldn't have a permanent fund today if it wasn't for a man named Oral Freeman in Ketchikan, Alaska, who said, hey, we need to put some money aside for our future. And that's what I've seen in Ketchikan is a lot of times we think outside of the box. We don't even think there is a box there. And that's what makes Ketchikan unique and special. And I think it's why we have a bright future. And this is the kind of thinking that I support, because I think it's going to take this kind of thinking to get through this spending nightmare that we've had for the last few years. Anyway, I would have supported that. Thank you.
And Sheen Davis.
I was present at the first staff meeting where the subject came up years ago. And my first thought was, wow, holy smokes, we're going to sue the state. But after listening to the manager, Mr. Bockhorst, and knowing his reputation with numbers, and right is right and wrong is wrong, I was firmly convinced after several staff meetings that it wasn't fair and it was unconstitutional. So, and that's only after several staff meetings, and that's not all the assembly meetings, the meetings with the attorneys, and, you know, basically peer review of other managers to see if, okay, yeah, this sounds like it to me too. So given that, yes, I would have voted yes to go ahead with the lawsuit.
Okay, and we do have a caller on the line, Joey. Joey, are you there?
I'm here.
Okay, go ahead with your question.
So I noticed that cost of shipping out our household trash have increased, and I was wondering if the candidates would support expanding our local recycling program to pull more valuable materials out of our waste stream.
Okay, increasing recycling availability in Ketchikan, and this time we'll start with Stephen Bradford.
It would be difficult to implement on a borough-wide basis since the city runs and maintains the sanitary landfill. But as a concept, I am very much in favor of recycling. I think those communities that have adopted it wholeheartedly do well with it. It takes a little bit of a learning curve to educate the citizens of the best way to recycle and the benefits of recycling. But if it's done properly, recycling can be a valuable additional service that a community, in my opinion, should adopt. It's better for our earth. I think in the long run it's better because you are recycling those items rather than just putting them into a landfill. We are currently incurring significant costs shipping trash south. Some of that could be perhaps reduced. But it's just a good idea and good for the earth. So, yes, I think we should be recycling more.
Kim Hodney?
I agree. Recycling is the right way to go. It does pay if you have the population and the infrastructure to support a recycling program. For us here, even if we're doing recycling, we're splitting our garbage up, we still have to ship it south. So economically, the borough, they just added $3 to us, so we went from $15 to $18 a month for the privilege of bringing our garbage from the borough into the city and up the hill. You know, no transfer stations, north or south, just I wish I had the rates of the city people. I digress. Excuse me. One of the ways, in my opinion, let's turn this into some lemonade. I would love to see, there's been talk about it for a long time, and Mr. Assemblyman Rotecki brought up the other night, just in passing at the end of the meeting, and that is a regional garbage facility for all of Southeast. You want to build something and create a few jobs, maybe garbage, but who knows where it can go from there, and drive the cost of our own cost down because we're going to collect everybody else's from Wrangell to Juneau to Sitka. The landfills are running out. So if we could create that regional, and it's been spoke of for years now around here, I believe it's something that needs studied, it needs pushed, and is absolutely doable. And believe it or not, the garbage can be a profit center for the Gateway Borough and bring my cost maybe down to $8 a month for collection if we're making money on the garbage. But that's how I see it. Recycling, absolutely. Everyone agrees that it's a good idea. It's just not feasible. It doesn't pencil out in Ketchikan simply because you still have to ship it out of here. You still got to package it up. It still has to go away. And like any scrap steel dealer right now, I'll tell you, the price is way too low. There's no money in it. Unfortunately, in the world of recycling, the same story goes. There's just no money in the recyclable products at the moment. Thank you.
Felix Wong?
Yeah, I'm supportive of recycling. If there's anything we could do to improve that adoption of splitting our garbage and being more responsible with the materials we get, being good stewards of the earth in general, I would love to see more of that. As Kim Hodney briefly brought up, perhaps there could be a new line of industry that we could develop as a region to process our recyclable material here instead of spending all that money, time, fuel to ship it to other places to deal with it. So that's my position on this item.
And Sue Pickrell?
Yes, I think we've become a throwaway society. All we have to do is go to garage sales on Saturday and see you know, the amount of everything from appliances to clothing to you name it. People just throw things away today. They don't save them. They don't retool things. My mom and dad bought a freezer, big freezer, in about 1953, I think it was. And that freezer ran for 50 years. because my father-in-law ended up with it, and it finally gave up the ghost, you know, a few years back. But after 50 years, you can't buy a freezer today. You can't buy a refrigerator today because they make them with so that they save on electricity. Well, the problem is you're buying a refrigerator every 8 to 10 years. You know, they don't make freezers that last 50 years anymore. And so I think we have to go to a recycling, you know, the way of recycling should be that we reuse and set up, you know, mom-and-pop industries where you can repair tools and turn appliances into something else or to fix them up. And to me, the borough to encourage grants for these kinds of things, recycling programs, that's where I think we should, you know, do a pilot project, see if we can get some kind of industry up and going. I was listening on KRBD this morning, actually, about a recycling program over in Prince of Wales, where they were recycling some of the, I think, the heat from one of their plants, of their pellet plants that was doing those kinds of things, and they've got a big, huge community garden operation, and the kids at school are learning that, and they're selling things as a part of that. That's the kind of thinking I think that we need to engage in. But actually, I also think it should be voluntary. I don't think people should be made to recycle, because I think when you mandate it, I think especially people in Alaska seem to be very they are very resistant to people making them do anything. But certainly with grant programs and the borough encouraging incentives and putting you know, maybe for people that are willing to recycle up at the dump, giving them a discount instead of adding $3 tax on on that recycling, you know, on bringing up garbage. So I'm in favor of recycling, but I'd like to see it as being voluntary and innovative. Thanks.
And Sheen Davis?
Innovative, yes. When I think recyclables, you know, everybody's thinking the garbage, the glass, the plastic, the paper. You know, you see the bins all through town. What I'd really like to see in Ketchikan is called a restore. That's a trademark, so that's, I'm not giving a plug for a business or anything. A restore takes building materials. Now, if you're ever up at the landfill, it's at least equal to the amount of construction debris showing up there as anything else. And there's some... To be perfectly honest, I've gotten some new stuff up there. So a restore here in Ketchikan would be awesome if somebody had the warehouse space, an entrepreneur, and, you know, the city and borough to help them out. What they do, what a restore is it takes building materials that are still valuable, good, you know, a 4-foot or a 6-foot 2x4. They'll clean them up and then remarket them. And they give credit to the people that show up with it. So when somebody's going to demolish a house or something like that, they'll be really careful with the insulation. They'll bag it, make sure it's clean. They'll take the windows out by unscrewing them instead of with the sledgehammer. And it'll protect their investment. So they take it to the restore and they sell it, and the restore cleans it up, and off they go to the next consumer who goes in there and buys it at a third of the cost or a quarter of the cost. So that's kind of the outside the box thinking that this group is really coming up with too. And I think recycling everything, and kind of like what Susan said, you know, it's retool it, recycle it. We didn't, you know, when I grew up, we didn't throw it away. We fixed it and had a shop full of baling wire and duct tape to do it. So, thank you.
And Trevor Shaw.
I definitely support recycling here in Ketchikan. We've got to make it practical. The word that we've been using a lot tonight is innovative, and so I we've got to find creative ways to do so. We do still have to get it off the island, so maybe a southern, southeast, central recycling hub and landfill is the way to go and generate some new jobs. A way that we can all work together and move that garbage out. But we have to realize that a lot of it isn't garbage. Only in the last 20 years has the word disposable become well used. And so we have to look at how we can save money, how we can reuse those things. Not only is it good for the earth, but it's good for the economy. It's good for the people who use it. And there are a lot of things that are being thrown away that can be reused. And so we have to look at how we can take those items and how we can recycle them, remake them, refurbish them into being used, and it'll save costs now, but exponentially down the road. And so that's definitely a conversation that I look forward to having and building upon, because it's things like this that's going to save us money in the long term. And we've got to get the trash off somewhere. We're on an island, so we might as well be making good use of it.
Thank you. And we have about 10 minutes left, which gives each of you a few minutes for closing statements. And so there were a bunch of questions I wasn't able to get to, unfortunately, but we covered quite a bit. So thanks a lot for your participation. And for closing statements, we'll start with Kim Hodney.
Thank you, Lila. I really appreciate the opportunity KBRD and yourself afforded us this evening. Also, real quickly, I'd like to throw a shout-out to Assemblyman Van Horn and Phillips for their time on the Borough Assembly. And without their leaving the seats, we wouldn't be having this forum this evening. So thanks for your time. They're wonderful gentlemen. They worked hard for the borough. And again, I will come back to family, jobs, and future. It's what drives me, my family. It's precious to me. It's precious to everyone. Again, they are the foundation. The family is the foundation. I don't care if it's a single parent family or somebody living on their own with their cat as in a studio, or you got 10 kids. However it works, family is important. Whatever that combination is that makes it, it is the foundation of what makes our community as diverse as it is, as innovative, as important it is to me. So, from the family, it has to be healthy. There are many, many distractions, and the police department, the counselors, there's things that can be done. The Ketchikan Wellness Coalition does a lot of hard work. I'd like to see them be able to be do more. There's important things there. And then from there, the school district, the funding, most important thing that we do, that we fund, that we're going to secure the future for our children, for the families, and hopefully turn that into the jobs. It's innovation. I love hearing about the Restore. You know, we need to get private sector, the entrepreneurs, behind what we're doing. And I don't mean behind by just giving away, and other than like Vigor and their support of the welding program. We really need to get government out of the way and to be a facilitator and a supporter for business and for growing business, not someone that throws up roadblocks with all of the permitting and the rezone this and the cost of that. If it makes sense, do it. Get government out of the way. There is no tax that I ever saw that I ever liked. Taxes are inevitable. We do have to have them, or we don't have the services that we need. I get that. But we don't need to grow ridiculous taxes. We need to hold the line where we are. We need to see what the state's going to force us to do and what direction we have to go in. So it's important. The term that these my fellow campaigners are looking at, and myself, is these next 3 years are going to be very important. It's going to some of the decisions we make will be long-lasting. And it's important. There are two seats open. I know I'm voting who I'm voting for, one of them. And what's kind of fun is I've listened very closely to my colleagues here tonight, because I will be voting for one of them as well. You know, it's the listeners' vote that I'm looking for, but I'm also looking to vote. I am a voter. I got to vote also. So I appreciate the opportunity, and I wish the best to all of my fellow campaigners, and thank you for your time.
Thank you. And Felix Wong?
Well, first off, I'd like to thank our listeners for spending the time to listen in and even weigh in by calling in. I'd like to thank KRBD for dedicating this time and effort as well to host us and hold a very frank discussion. As a potential candidate member, I look forward to supporting more industry, like what Ocean Alaska did in their presentation last night. That was amazing. I was impressed that they've come this far in this little time. And I'd like to see more of that happening here in Ketchikan. And as I mentioned before, I'm very interested in seeing private entities be more involved in the community, like tying together with recycling. What I've been told is industries like Vigor Alaska, they help gather up on what the clothes, send it to Rendezvous. Rendezvous cuts it up, bundles it, and we buy it back. I'd like to see more of that kind of thing happening, and perhaps, like I mentioned before, maybe find a way to grow an industry out of recycling, and perhaps that could also tie in with education. Show children what it's like to process materials, how materials are made, how we get things, and how not to be so wasteful. So once again, I'm passionate for education and jobs. And thank you once again.
Sue Pickrell?
Well, thank you so much for having me here tonight, and I appreciate the time that the panel here has put in and their thoughtful answers. I guess what I offer to the voters is proven leadership. I have commitment to this community. I'm going to stay in this community, and I'm here to represent you. I'd like to see new thinking, new ideas moving forward. You know, I remember the day that the airport opened, and I remember having to take the ferry over there and thinking, boy, this is not the way to go. Having to get on the ferry to go all the way over to the airport when I just, in high school, had been up at Sitka, and they had a bridge over, you know, over to the airport and over to, you know, the other side of the island. We would have a bridge today if people in the borough assembly and the city council could have agreed back in 1974-73 as to where that bridge should go and what it should look like. And we couldn't agree back then, and here we are 40 something years later still wondering where our bridge is, and everybody else in America is deciding that we don't need a bridge. So I want different kind of thinking for the borough assembly, and that's what I offer. Is I'm very much a solutions based person. I'd like to look at finding solutions to solve a problem. And I think Ketchikan has a history of that. I think we've been leaders in this state for innovative thinking. And that's why I am excited about potentially being on this borough assembly. I hope that you will get out and vote. I've been most discouraged over the last several years that we only have 27 to 28% voter turnout for our elections. That's wrong. It truly is wrong. I think we're teaching our children that it doesn't matter if you vote or not. It doesn't matter who's running. It doesn't matter, you know, what these folks that are sitting at this table say. It does matter. It matters that you vote for the right person to represent you. It matters that you vote for the person you think will listen to you. And it matters that you get out and vote and make a difference and make your voice heard through that ballot box. So, again, I encourage people to get out October 6th. I would appreciate your vote. And I'm here to represent you and here to be your voice. Thank you.
And Sheen Davis.
Hey, thanks a lot for the hospitality tonight. I had a good time. My big platform is safety. I've said that several times, and just elaborate just a little bit. Is on worker safety, and I think there's some money to be had there too. Worker safety from everybody from the administrative assistant to the public works. I believe that that anybody can do better safety, and there's time for safety. I believe that anywhere from 5 to 6 figures can be realized back to the borough in workman's comp if each department in the borough were to be a sharp employer. The borough can't itself by means of OSHA, but years ago when I was talking with Phil McElroy of OSHA doing one of our safety programs, he suggested a sharp program. And in that program, he indicated that anywhere between 30 and 40% would be realized on workman's comp. So we looked hard into that, and I'd look hard into that with the borough too, you know, especially with the shortcomings of the budget. Finally, you got about six people. Yeah, you got six candidates in this room. There's a lot of good people here, and they're working really hard. So even if you don't get out and vote for me, vote for a couple others. Thank you.
And Trevor Shaw.
I would like to thank KRBD for having us, for giving us the time to be able to talk about the issue so that the voters can make a well-informed decision. That's always critically important. And for me, public service isn't about convenience. It's about commitment and courage. And I've been involved in the process when it's been rocky. I've had to make tough decisions for our community. But even when it's been tough, I've stood on principle and made solid decisions and supported sound, responsible government, and I intend to continue doing so. Our community deserves to have a bright future, and that's what I'm here to fight for. I want to ensure that future generations have the same, if not better, opportunities than we did. I want them to be able to enjoy the prosperity of a growing, sustainable southern Southeast Alaska. I see Ketchikan as being the hub for commerce in southern Southeast Alaska, and there's no reason why we shouldn't be. We have a lot going on, and we need to ensure that our government is pro-growth and that we can provide a good environment for not only keeping businesses here but attracting new ones. And so, and I think that I have a perspective that no other candidate has. I'm a young adult. I ventured into politics at 18, and as such, I've been able to really take the time and get to know the issues, and as such, I'm a young adult with a proven record of dedicated public service and sound leadership, and that's what I want to bring to the table. Don't have a shortage of passion or energy, and I enjoy every moment of the people's work that I get to do. There's nothing that I enjoy more because there's tough decisions ahead. I've spent time studying the issues, getting to know the situations that are facing our community, and to ensure that we haven't climaxed, to make sure that we have a great future ahead, that we're taking the time to plan for not only now and weathering the storm, but also that we have a strong plan for the future. On day one, I plan on hitting the ground running as a borough assembly member if I have the opportunity to do so. I'd like to thank you for your time. I hope to have the honor of serving the community on the borough assembly, and I humbly ask for your vote. Please get out on October 6th and vote. Thank you.
Thank you. And Stephen Bradford.
Well, thank you very much. I think the next few years will determine what kind of a community we can leave to our children. We've discussed some exciting opportunities we have ahead of us with the expansion of the Coast Guard base, growth at the shipyard and the hospital, and the nearby mining ventures. But on the other hand, we have the state's financial condition looming over us. So it will take some difficult decisions. Local government creates a climate for economic growth and stability only when it makes wise decisions. And if it does not make prudent decisions in the allocation of assets and resources, then it simply becomes a problem through high taxes, regulations, and bureaucracy. I have no hidden agenda and no special interest. I want to represent all of the citizens, both those inside the city and out. And I want to help make wise, prudent decisions about the services that we provide, the quality of education we provide to our children, and what we can do that will enhance the quality of life for all of us here in the borough. I ask for your vote. Thank you.
Thank you. And that's it for KRBD's Assembly Call-In Forum. I've been your host, Layla Carey, and thanks to the callers who called in with their questions and to the candidates who were here tonight, Sheen Davis, Trevor Shaw, Stephen Bradford, Kim Hodney, Sue Pickerel, and Felix Wong. And for more special election coverage, tune in to KRBD at 7 p.m. Thursday for a call-in forum featuring candidates for city mayor. And as always, remember to vote on October 6th. Good night.